I have been busy, but it was good. A little salty for my taste. The guy leaned on top of the case, his massive arms flexing. Agreed. I cut it with a bit of this new blue we got, a cow's milk, very silky and tart. The Meridian, have you tried it? No, William said. I'm not, so I need some prosciutto? The guy looked at him, then me, and smiled.
Sure. Quarter pound or half?
Half. Great. And I'll throw in a bit of this new Black Forest I want you to try. You have the Bacilla goat at home still, yes? You've got to pair them on a baguette. It's incredible. Just a sec. As the guy opened the case and drew out a huge slab of meat, then walked over to the slicer, I looked pointedly at William. He ignored me, focused instead on the ground sausage display. Finally, I poked him. What? Who is that guy? I asked, my voice low. He blushed again. He's cute, William. I barely know him, he replied, going darker red. We talked meat and cheese at closing once. I think he likes you, Luna. Stop it.
William, the guy called out over the clanging of the slicer. You want this thin? Are you making that melon dish we had at dinner that time?
I gaped at him.
Yes,
he stammered. I could literally feel heat coming off his face.
That would, be great.
Excuse me, a man carrying a baguette said, coming up to us. Where's the bulk nut section?
Over by the flowers,
William told him, clearly grateful for once for this distraction. Straight ahead, then left.
You had him over for dinner?
I demanded as the man walked away, taking a wrong turn immediately.
When was this?
Hush, he said, fiddling with the lemons in his basket.
Here you go,
the meat guy said, dropping two plastic bags on the counter.
The prosciutto you like, with a sample of the Black Forest. You want me to walk over to Cheese's with you so you can sample that Meridian?
Sure, I said, smiling at him.
No,
William told him at the same time. We have to go. I'm cooking and the chicken is... next time.
Sure thing.
The guy smiled at me and then wider at William.
I'll look forward to it.
William grabbed the meat, tossing it in his basket, then hustled away, vanishing around a display of flavored popcorn. I turned back to the guy, sticking out my hand. I'm Luna, and you are?
Matt, he replied. We shook. You're William's...
goddaughter, I said, which was the easy explanation.
He's a great guy, he told me, looking at the popcorn. And, still single? Yes?
Yes, I replied.
Good to know,
he said, then knocked the counter between us, smiled, and walked away. I found William dabbing his brow by the macaroons.
You didn't tell me you'd had anyone over for a date.
It was one time, he said. I waited. Look, he's nice. I'm just not ready for anything.
William, you haven't dated since I was in middle school.
Exactly. I wouldn't even know where to start. With prosciutto and melon, apparently, I said. He blushed again. Look, if I can get back out there dating, so can you. He looked at me.
You're dating again?
Kind of. Ambrose and I made a bet. I'm actually meeting the lumberjack at a party tonight. He looked surprised.
Really?
I nodded. It's nothing serious. That's the whole point. I just have to date, but Ambrose has to commit for 7 weeks. Whoever caves first has to get set up by the other with their person of choice.
Ambrose gets to set you up?
He asked. If he wins, I said, which he won't.
You should hope not,
because he'd pick himself for sure. Now my eyes widened.
What? No, That's not how it works. You said he could pick anyone, correct?
He crossed the aisle, scanning the boxes. So he says it's him, and then you have no choice but to go out with him. Pretty genius. I take it that part was his idea.
Come to think of it, it had been.
But that meant nothing either. Ambrose does not want to go out with me, William. We barely even like each other.
So you say, he said, picking up a box and putting it in the basket. I hear a lot of laughing when you two are in the office, and you looked pretty cozy at that photo shoot.
Sir, can you help me with the curry sauces? A woman in a sundress called out from one aisle down. I need one that's mild but fragrant.
I have to get out of here, William hissed to me, starting toward the register. Still, he couldn't help himself, saying to the woman as he passed her,
Tamils, in mild. Don't use too much.
Thank you.
At the registers, I was determined to bring up the Ambrose thing again, demanding why on earth he thought that, of all things, would be the outcome of our bet. Because we looked good pretending to slice a cake? But just as I started to say this, his phone rang. It was my mother, calling about some issue with the photographer of the Eleanor Lynn wedding that weekend, serious enough that they kept talking the entire ride back home. As we pulled up in the driveway, I could see Jilly in her backyard, alone for once, waiting for me. No time to ask more questions, which was maybe a good thing after all. But as I said goodbye to him, then crossed the grass to Jilly's, I couldn't help but consider the fact that William's intuition was usually dead on. Then again, everyone can be wrong sometimes.
There he is, Jilly said, her voice low. Act cool.
This had to be the worst thing to say to a nervous person. I thought about telling her so, but I was too on edge watching Leo make his way across the crowded living room. Instead, I asked, Whose party is this, anyway?
Jack from Turbo Taco, she said, sipping her beer. His parents have that truck with the racing flames on it. They sell the hottest hot sauce in town. People have been hospitalized.
Wow, I said, as Leo stopped to talk to two girls who had their backs to us. He had on yet another plaid shirt, short-sleeved this time, and no apron. Not that he would wear an apron to a party. Okay, I was nervous and crazy. I took another gulp of my beer, which was warm even though I'd only just gotten it.
God, I feel so out of place. Why did I agree to do this again?
Because the lumberjack is cute and you want to beat Ambrose, she replied cheerfully, adjusting the neckline of her dress. Speaking of which, there he is. I guess he found it after all. I glanced over to where she was looking. Sure enough, there was Ambrose in the kitchen, popping a beer open on the countertop. When he saw us, he waved, pushing that curl from his forehead. Ira was on the deck outside, being petted by a group of girls holding red cups. This time, he had on a polka dot bandana. Apparently, this was his signature look now.
Found it? I asked.
Ambrose hadn't heard of the neighborhood when I told him about this party. Now I turned, giving her my full attention.
You invited him?
Yeah, when I gave him that ride the other night. She was scanning the crowd, not looking at me. When she realized I was staring at her, she blinked.
What?
I thought you couldn't stand him. She flipped her hand.
Oh, that was just a first impression. He's okay.
Between this and William's melon prosciutto date, I suddenly felt like no one was telling me anything.
You gave Ambrose a ride? When?
Last week, she said easily. I was doing register for my dad downtown after the bars closed, and I saw him and his dog walking. I couldn't just drive past them, especially at 2 a.m.
I'm surprised he was alone, I remarked, as Leo looked up and saw me, waving a hand.
I waved back, and the girls he was talking to both turned to look at me. I sucked down more of my beer.
He said he just dodged some girl at a club.
she replied. Crazy story. Had to run out the back door. I think I heard about that. I'm sure you did. She took another sip. Anyway, I just drove him back to his sister's. He invited me in for a snack, but I said no. Being around food all night in close quarters and all. Plus, I felt super greasy.
He asked you in?
Yeah. She was looking around again and took a second to meet my eyes. Why? Is that weird? You guys are just friends, right? Not even that, I said quickly. We just work together. And make bets together? That's strictly for bragging rights, I told her, thinking about what William had said. That's what I thought. She tucked a piece of hair behind one ear. I don't think he's my type anyway. Too loosey-goosey, not a sport coat in sight. Remember how that worked out last time, though? I reminded her. Maybe it's not the best indicator. True, she agreed. I guess you never know. Leo had wrapped up his conversation and was now making his way toward us, winding through the growing crowd. My date, even though I wasn't supposed to call him that, and yet now all I could think about was Jilly and Ambrose together. It would never happen, would it? Hey there, Leo said, sliding in beside me. Where'd you get the beers? Outside, I told him. Follow me. We cut through the kitchen, which boasted an impressive display of hot sauces stacked on the wide windowsill, and out onto the side deck, where the keg was set up under a tangle of Christmas lights. Ira, tied nearby, saw me immediately and began wagging his tail. Hey there, bud, I said, bending down to scratch his ears. He'd had a haircut and smelled like powder, clearly freshly bathed. 10 to 1, Ambrose met a pretty dog groomer, I said out loud. Am I right? What? Leo asked from the keg. Nothing, I said, standing back up and facing him. Do you want to go back inside, or let's stay here for a bit? He replied. Less chance of bumping into more people from high school. We walked over to a bench that ran along the deck where I took a seat. Ira, now on a diagonal from me, let out a whine and then lay down, his head on his paws. You're from here, too? I said as Leo leaned on the nearby railing. I didn't realize. Born and bred, he replied. Class of 2015, Kiffney Brown. I raised my eyebrows. So you're smart. By the numbers, I was a big-time math nerd before I started writing. More new information. You write? A nod. I'm in the program at the U, workshops, independent study, all that stuff. I was doing both tracks, but now I'm strictly fiction. What kind of stuff? The novel I'm working on right now is kind of a stream of consciousness take on the dwindling of human contact in society. He replied, as easily as anyone else might rattle off their birth date and astrological sign. Clearly, he'd said this before. It's futuristic, but also set in present day. I'm playing with time a lot. It's challenging. Huh, I said, before realizing this was about the stupidest response I could have offered. I added, I love to read, but I've never been very good at writing if it wasn't, like, papers for school. Oh, it's totally different, he said, taking a sip of his beer as two girls in thick sandals clomped over to the keg. Anyone can be taught to present a basic argument or summarize information. Fiction is a skill. You either have it or you don't. And you do. Well, yeah. He must have known this sounded arrogant because he smiled at me, diluting it somewhat. But I'm still learning. I have this awesome professor, McCallum McClatchy. You ever read his books? I shook my head, not exactly wanting to share that the current novel on my bedside table was a fantasy novel about girls put under a spell that made them into tigers. They then had to fight a series of other tigers, also former humans, in order to turn back. I'd once been a big fan of contemporary fiction. Since I lost Ethan, though, real life had been bad enough all around me on a daily basis. Between the covers of a book, I wanted anything else.
Oh, he's great, Leo continued. Irish-born, really sparse in terms of his prose, but with thick language. His whole first book takes place in a potato field over the course of one day, and it's told from the point of view of the plow.
Wow, I said.
It's incredible.
I'd never seen him this excited about coffee.
I'll loan you one of my copies, if you don't mind highlights and margin notes.
I don't, I said.
Great, I'll bring it to work tomorrow.
He smiled at me again.
It can be kind of a tough read with all the footnotes and flashbacks. McCallum is my inspiration when it comes to time shifting on the page, but I can walk you through it.
I'd said I wasn't good at writing fiction, not reading it, I thought, but then told myself to stop being so judgmental. When you loved something, you wanted everyone else to love it in the same way, right?
Right.
Just then, my phone rang. With it buried in my bag, which was over my shoulder, it took a second to grab it, during which Leo raised his eyebrows at my ringtone. Who was being judgmental now?
Hello?
Wave at me,
a voice said. I glanced at the screen. Ambrose.
What? I'm inside, in the living room, facing you right now. Wave at me. Make it look urgent.
You need an urgent wave?
Just do it, please.
Then he hung up. I turned, peering over a group of girls huddled in the open sliding glass door. Ambrose was indeed all the way across the room from me, a red cup now in his hands. A girl with broad shoulders and a high ponytail was facing him, her hands on her hips. He looked like he might be sweating.
What's going on? Leo asked.
Not sure, I said, then waved at Ambrose. He looked surprised, then glanced both ways, as if wondering if it was too late to avoid being spotted. I waved again, this time with a bit more arm. The girl in front of him turned around, narrowing her eyes at me.
What was that, your ringtone? Leo asked me. It sounded like...
It's nothing, I told him, as the girl with the ponytail turned back to Ambrose, sticking her finger in his face. I watched as he slid out from in front of her, talking the entire time, then made a beeline across the room, dodging in and out of people before popping out the door a minute or two later. Ira, spotting him, began wiggling, his tail going crazy.
Thanks,
he said to me as he slid in beside me, bumping my leg with his. Not only did I not feel awkward, I didn't even move over.
Melissa was getting a bit clingy.
I looked back at the living room where Melissa, with her big shoulders, was now glaring at me. What did you tell her?
That you are my ex-girlfriend and we've gotten back together since she and I hung out and you are very jealous.
He replied smoothly, now scratching a grateful Ira behind his ears.
Excuse me? I said. It's fine. Our road trip to the mountains was weeks ago.
You went to the mountains with that girl?
I needed some clean air, he explained. Don't you, sometimes?
I just looked at him. Across from me, Leo snorted into his beer.
Anyway, don't let me interrupt your night, he said, bending down to untie Ira from the deck rail. We'll just make our exit and hope for better results at the next party.
There's always another party, isn't there? I asked.
Hope so, he said cheerfully, because this one is too small for me and Melissa. You might want to avoid her, you know, just to be on the safe side. Won't she wonder why Luna's talking to another guy if she's with you? Leo asked. No, I told her she has a wandering eye and is super promiscuous, Ambrose told him. That's why we broke up.
You did what?
I said.
I'm going now, he said, wrapping the leash around his wrist. You two kids have fun.
Leo, what are you doing here? Once again, Ambrose was saved by the blonde, this time a very pretty girl with long, straight hair, wearing denim shorts and a peasant blouse, gladiator sandals wrapped around her tan legs. Everything about her screamed beach and flowy, and I instantly was aware of my own drab ensemble.
Lauren, said Leo, breaking into a smile. Hey.
They embraced, her kissing his cheek, then both turned to face us. Hi, she said, sticking her hand out. I'm Lauren.
Luna, I said.
She's the girl I met at work, the one I told you about,
Leo explained.
And this is Ambrose,
Ambrose said, offering his own hand. He was looking right at her, of course, full attention, focused.
And this is Ira.
Hello, Ira, Lauren said, crouching down to pet him.
Aren't you a handsome boy?
He takes after me, Ambrose told her.
I rolled my eyes. Lauren got back to her feet, then gave Leo a friendly punch to the arm.
You jerk! You didn't tell me you'd be here when I said how I was dreading it earlier.
I didn't know it was the same party, he told her.
I'm newly single, Lauren explained to me. Ambrose, hearing this, visibly increased his attention level. And Leo's been on me to try to get back out there and date, but it's hard.
I know it, I told her. I'm in the same boat. My best friend basically had to drag me here.
Then you get it. She sighed, tucking a piece of hair behind her ear, which was studded with a row of gold and diamond hoops. I'd never seen anyone so, well, shimmery.
Once you get dumped, the last thing you want is to offer up your heart again, right? Someone dumped you?
Ambrose asked, aghast.
What are they, crazy?
In response, Lauren smiled gratefully.
You're sweet.
And, well, yes. We were together for 4 years.
And had known each other since kindergarten, where we met, Leo added. We were the fearsome threesome on the playground.
Never date one of your best friends, Lauren said to me.
When it ends, you lose so much more than a boyfriend. It sucks.
On this last word, her voice broke a bit, and she smiled, embarrassed. Leo put his arm around her, and she put her head on his shoulder.
Patrick's a doofus. You'll find someone else, someone better.
Which, I guess, is why I'm here, she said with a sigh.
I'll stay for one beer, then I'm going home to get into bed and eat ice cream.
That sounds like a plan, Ambrose said. He reached over, grabbing a red cup and filling it, then presented it with a flourish.
Personally, I like Rocky Road after a bad breakup. It's like a metaphor. Fitting.
Thanks, she said. Lately, I've been mainlining rainbow sherbet. I was hoping it had antidepressant powers.
Just avoid the chocolate peanut butter or pralines and cream.
Too couply for the newly single.
That's good advice, she said.
Ambrose was just leaving, I told her.
Only because I had no reason to stay, he said. Now we're talking ice cream, so I do.
Lauren blushed slightly, then looked down into her beer.
I'm warning you, I might be terrible company. If I get buzzed, I'll probably start telling you my entire sad story.
I love sad stories. So does Ira,
Ambrose told her. The dog, for his part, started tugging toward the stairs that led down to the yard, clearly sending a message.
Oh, looks like someone needs a walk. I'll be back in a sec.
I'll come with you if you want, Lauren offered.
Yeah?
He said, pushing that curl out of his face.
It's not like I really want to stay here, she said. Lead the way, then.
Ambrose waved his hand, motioning for her to go first. She glanced at Leo, shrugged with a smile, and then started down the steps, Ambrose and Ira following along behind her. I could hear their voices, already chatting as they disappeared into the dark of the yard below.
He'd better behave himself, Leo said as we watched them cut across the grass,
their shadows thrown in the moonlight.
That girl's a real prize.
I believed this, even though I'd just met her, and was pretty sure Ambrose got it too. And watching this particular departure, I knew something was happening. Even from a distance, you could tell when two people simply clicked. Starting with a nighttime walk, well, that just sealed the deal. Chapter 16. Ethan did phone me from the parking lot, just as he'd promised. I missed the call. In my defense, I was packed in the elevator with a group of people who'd just arrived, all talking over each other. If I heard a ringtone of soaring soprano, backed by moaning violins, I probably just assumed it belonged to one of them. It wasn't until I got off on my floor and it rang again in the quiet of the hallway that I realized the noise was coming from my pocket. I pulled it out. "You might be annoyed now," he said in lieu of hello, "but that song will grow on you. Someday, it might even make you cry." When I remembered this later, it broke whatever pieces were left of my heart. But that was later. "You put a Lexi Navigator song as my ringtone?" I asked. "While I was getting my bag," he told me. "And before you get mad about me jacking your password for tunage," he said, "you really should make it harder to figure out."
"How did you know it was William?" I asked.
"You did say he was the alarm code at the house," he told me. I had, while telling a story about how this was the way I learned to spell his name as a kid. William was our password for everything. I took a guess. "Well," I said, still working through all this, "I'd had to stop walking just to catch up, so to speak." "Now you know all my secrets." "Don't worry, they're safe with me." I turned, looking out over the balcony to the street below. Somewhere, a red car was driving steadily away from me, putting a mile, then another mile, between us. "What am I supposed to tell people when they ask me why I have a Lexi Navigator ringtone?" I asked him now. "That you are her biggest fan because your boyfriend loves her," he replied. "Boyfriend." I liked the sound of that. "And then you show them your screensaver." I pulled my phone down, flipping to that setting. Sure enough, there was Ethan grinning next to Lexi Navigator in her stage outfit. I put it back to my ear. "Okay, that's pretty cute. I'm glad you think so. As we were driving off, I started to worry that maybe you would hate it. Hold on a sec." I heard a voice in the background, then Ethan saying something. "Look, we're stopping for gas and snacks. I'll call back in a bit, okay? You'll know me by, pay attention, the words are changing." "What? The name of the song about her grandmother, Lulu, come on. How are you going to date Lexi Navigator's number one fan if you don't know her biggest hits?" I smiled, turning back to my room. "I'll get right on that. You can start with your tunage library, under recently purchased. Talk to you in a few." With that, he was gone, leaving me to just stare, open-mouthed, as I went to my music app to find, yes, 5 new songs all by Lexi Navigator. I'd listened to them all, over and over again, in between the dozens of short conversations we'd have in the following hours as we each headed back to our respective homes. With Ethan in my ear, the drive back to Lakeview felt and looked entirely different. I felt like a different girl. I would never again be who I was when I walked down those beach stairs, took off my shoes, and stepped into the sand. And I was so, so glad. Once home, we talked constantly, and when we weren't talking, we were texting or chatting face-to-face on "Hi there." He'd linked the SO, significant other, part of his YouMe.com page to my profile right after our first phone conversation, at the same time I was adding his to my own.
Despite my having dated a few guys already, it wasn't until Ethan that I understood what all the love songs and sappy movie endings really were all about. I finally understood Jilly's buoyant romanticism, the hopefulness that seeps into every part of your life when you know someone loves you in that way. I ate, slept, and dreamed Ethan. When he wasn't in my ear or on my screen in one way or another, I was running over our night together in my mind, hour by hour, so I'd be sure not to forget a single detail. As we promised, we immediately began to make plans to get together again. His dad, still eager to get on Ethan's good side post-divorce, said he'd buy him a ticket down for his fall break, which was in mid-October, overlapping by a few days with mine. I circled the days on my desk calendar and began a countdown on my phone, getting teased regularly by my mom, William, and Jilly about my visible impatience with how slowly time was passing. "I have never seen you like this," Jilly said to me, staring as I hummed along to Lexi Navigator on the car radio as we drove to school the first day of senior year. "It's like you've been body-swapped or something." "What?" I said. "You've been in love tons of times." "Not like that. This? What's going on here?" She swirled her finger at me. "It's some serious first love stuff. Sometimes I look over at you and you're just sitting there, smiling at nothing." "I am not." "You are. And I'm jealous." She sighed, checking her reflection in the visor mirror. "I want an Ethan, too." I couldn't blame her. To me, he was perfect. This gorgeous, funny, smart boy who thought I, Lulu, hung the moon as well. It was like my life had been silent in a way before, and now there was a soundtrack, the very best music playing along in the background at every moment. You didn't miss it when it wasn't there. You didn't know to. But once it was, nothing ever sounded the same again. "Tell me where you are now," I'd say to Ethan when we talked before school, and then at lunch, and after last period, and several more times up until bed, when he was the last voice I heard before going to sleep. "Walking across the quad to practice, stuffing my face with a bag of cheese pops," he said. "Where are you?" "Heading to the coffee shop for afternoon caffeine for Mom and William." "Double shot for her, or no?" "Just the one. She already sounded like she was buzzing." He just knew me so well already. Mostly because we talked so much, but there was something else as well. The time we'd been together had been so short and yet so intense that everything was sped up, like the difference between dog and people years. I already felt like I'd known him forever. This was what love was. I knew it now, and it changed everything. "When this boy does come," William said to me in early September, as I sat texting with Ethan after school as he rode the bus to a lacrosse game, "I'm going to have to sit him down and have a talk." "You?" my mom asked from her desk, where she was busy checking a spreadsheet of attendees to the next wedding. "Isn't that my job?" "I'm the father figure. If anyone gets to sit cleaning a gun while making the boy squirm talking about honor and chivalry, it's me." "A gun?" I said. "You maced yourself the last time you tried to carry pepper spray," my mom told him. "Well, I obviously wouldn't do that while giving this talk," he replied snippily. "No one is lecturing Ethan about anything," I told them both, using my own stern voice. "We are all just going to make him feel welcome and show him the best of Lakeview." "Which is what?" William asked. "Luna, of course," my mom said. "That's what he's coming for after all, right?" At this, I blushed, even as my phone beeped, Ethan responding to my last message. "Now what are you doing?" "Putting up with my mom and William teasing me about you." "Ha! Can't wait to meet them." "Look at our girl," William said then. "She's crazy in love. We didn't ruin her with our bad attitudes after all." "Not yet," my mom said,
Remember, they've only spent one night together. William gave her a look. Natalie, for God's sake, let the girl have her fun. It's not her fault we're all dried up and unlovable. Speak for yourself. I am very lovable. William snorted. My mom caught my eye, then mouthed an, I'm sorry, looking genuinely apologetic. I knew in truth she was happy for me, but just worried, as her own love story hadn't ended well. But this was different. I was different. And Ethan, well, was Ethan. He would never do anything to hurt me. It never occurred to me that, in fact, it might be someone else. Chapter 17. Surely Ambrose had always been a person who hummed. I probably just hadn't noticed. Isn't it time for a morning coffee run? I asked him as he launched into the second go-round of a currently popular dance song, wordlessly. You know how my mom gets without her caffeine. He paused the instrumentals. I thought you'd want to do it, to see Leo. Don't you? I shifted in my seat, then realized I was literally squirming at this question and made myself still. I'm kind of deep in these place cards right now. He looked over from his own stack, equal in size to mine.
You are?
Well, yeah. I tried to sound breezy, offhand, two things I never was. It didn't work, a fact made clear when he gave me his full focus of attention.
Hold on. I thought you guys had a good time the other night.
We did, I said, folding another card. The paper was thick and embossed, each name done by a professional calligrapher. Wreck-it, you pay for it, had been my mom's directive. Never before had paper made me nervous. I'm just, you know. Usually, when you trail off, people just finish the sentence for you in their own heads. Ambrose's was clearly still full of beats and choruses because he said,
You're what?
I'm busy. I told him, and it's your job. He drew back.
Gosh, okay, sorry. I'll go right now.
With that, he pushed out his chair and got to his feet, then headed to the back office, where my mom and William were conferring with the valet parking company about Eleanor Lynn's rehearsal dinner, whistling as he went. I was sure he'd never done that before. So he was happy. No crime in that. And just because he'd had a great time with Lauren the night before, he hadn't said so exactly, but the music-making spoke volumes, didn't mean he was going to win our bet and me lose. I only had to keep going on dates, just like I'd done with Leo. I wasn't humming, mind you, but I'd done it. I winced to myself even as I thought this. After Lauren and Ambrose had left the night before, Leo and I had talked for another hour or so, mostly about his writing, the conversation interrupted occasionally by Jilly, coming to complain that the party sucked and she wanted to go home. Finally, around 11, she bumped into some guy she knew from yet another food truck, the community was wide-reaching, and decided she wanted to stay indefinitely just as I was ready to leave. In the end, I got a ride with Leo on the back of his fixed-gear bike, where I felt every bump and rattle of the handful of miles back to my house. Once there, I could tell he expected to be invited in by the way he kept glancing at the door. But William's car was still there, and I didn't feel like making introductions. In the end, we sat on the curb, the bike lying beside us like a literal third and fourth wheel. I was tired of talking, tired in general, and trying to come up with a good exit strategy, but Leo was still going full speed about his writing.
Really? It's all process, he explained to me. You have to dig, you know? Fiction is blood, sweat, tears, shit, all mixed together, like the lotus from the mud. If you nurture it, something beautiful comes.
I could admit this all sounded exotic and dramatic at one point, But that had been a few hours earlier, and I still didn't understand exactly what his book in progress was about.
"That's cool,"
I said, a response I'd taken to alternating with a few others, like, "Wow, interesting," and, just for variety, "I never saw it like that." For someone so interested in words, he didn't seem to notice this repetition. Now he smiled, like I was cute, before reaching out and rubbing his thumb along the side of my mouth, then down my chin. I was thinking maybe I had something on my face, and wondering for how long, when he suddenly moved in to kiss me. It was swift and abrupt and took me by total surprise, even before he leaned me back into the grass with one smooth movement. I had a flash of a vampire whipping a cape over his head, which was not exactly romantic, and then his mouth was on mine, tongue wriggling.
Ugh.
I let it go on for a long enough period so as not to seem totally rude, then sat back up.
"Well," I said as he pulled back, his eyes sort of dazed, "I should go. It's late."
"Now?"
He looked at the house again.
"Really?"
"Yeah." I made an effort to look apologetic, like this was not actually my choice. "I have an early day and all."
"Yeah, okay, cool,"
he said, cutting me off.
"I get it."
I stood up, aware of the dampness from the grass on my back. "I'll see you around work, I guess."
"Sure."
I started up the walk, relieved to finally be wrapping things up. I'd only taken a few steps, though, when he said,
"It's the bet, right? Just dates, nothing more. FYI, I didn't really want that either."
Pausing, I said, "Okay."
"It is,"
he replied, pulling a cigarette out of his pocket. Ugh, at least he'd waited.
"Okay, I mean."
"Right," I thought. He was still there on the curb when I went inside. So that was my night. Not totally terrible, just weird. It did not, however, leave me humming, whistling, and walking with a literal bounce in my step, something I noticed as Ambrose passed me, heading out for the coffees.
"You want anything?"
he asked.
"Maybe a nice melty donut?"
"No," I told him. Then realizing I sounded surly, I added, "Thanks, though." He gave me a thumbs up, then pushed out the door. Ira, tied up to the nearby bench and wearing a green bandana, got right to his feet, wagging happily. As Ambrose bent over him, petting his head, I saw he was whistling again. Just then, my phone rang. Enough time had passed that sometimes I didn't even notice my Lexi Navigator ringtone anymore. Today, though, for whatever reason, the opening chords made my heart hurt in a way it had not in a while.
"Hey,"
Jilly said, sounding especially cheerful herself, considering it was morning and I knew she had all four kids with her for a full day.
"Happy Wednesday."
"Is it?" I asked, doing another card with a bit of extra force on the fold.
"Sure,"
she replied.
"It's hump day, sunny and gorgeous, and we are on the way to get one of the best biscuits in town. It's perfect."
I blinked. In the background, Crawford spoke for me, saying,
"You're being weird today."
"Oh, hush! Can't a person be happy once in a while?"
she asked. To me, she said, "The gravy truck is actually right over near you. Can you take a break? I want you to meet Michael Salem."
"Does he always go by his first and last names?"
"Salem is his middle name," she corrected me, "and I think it's cute."
"This the guy from the party last night?"
I asked.
"I met him there, yes,"
she replied,
"but he's not just a guy from a party, if you know what I mean."
"What do you mean?" I asked.
"Just that, you know,"
she lowered her voice. "I like him. A lot. Like, very much a lot." I was about to tell her she'd only just met him, that it couldn't possibly be that serious. But I knew the tone of her voice, that buoyant giggle,
the sudden glint the world got on a morning after like this. Clearly, Epic was going around. Too bad I'd already had my turn. "That's great, Chili," I said. "I'm so happy for you." "Well, I mean, it's early," she replied, sounding anything but underconfident. "But he's just... he's so nice, Luna, and totally not my type. He had on a hoodie and carried a skateboard the entire time we were together. And he's a redhead with freckles." I smiled. "I can't wait to meet him." "Then come to the truck. Their chicken biscuits are to die for."
"I wanted a muffin," Crawford said.
"Me too," said Kit Kat. "We hate biscuits."
"Hush up,"
Jilly sang out, hardly bothered. "Luna?" I looked back at the office, where my mom was still on the phone. "I can't. We've got this huge rehearsal dinner and wedding this weekend. There's tons to do."
"Oh, okay."
She sounded disappointed for about 2 seconds.
"But you will meet him, and soon, okay? We'll double date, you and the lumberjack. Hey, how did that go, anyway? You looked like you were having fun."
"It was fine," I told her as Ambrose came back in with the coffees, then hummed his way past me, giving me a jaunty salute with his free hand. I tried not to grimace. Probably failed.
"I'll fill you in later. Do that. Or call if you do get a break. I'm in the car or the truck until at least 5. Have a great day."
"Okay," I said, not even trying to match her enthusiasm. I put down my phone, then picked up another card, folding it and adding it to the stack. As I reached for another one, a book suddenly dropped onto the table beside me. A slim paperback, the cover featured a line drawing of a field, one crow flying overhead. "Harvest," it said on the cover. I looked at Ambrose, who was taking his seat beside me.
"What's this?"
"A loan from Leo," he replied, starting in on his own stack of cards. "He said to take your time with it."
I pulled the book over, flipping it open. "A novel by McCallum McClatchy," said the title page. I turned another page, which had passages highlighted, notes scribbled in the margins, and read the first line. "In a world, in a field, a plow sits. Harvest has come."
"Oh, for God's sake," I said out loud, pushing it aside.
Ambrose glanced at me.
"Are you okay?"
"I'm fine,"
I said, a bit too forcefully. "I just want to work."
"Sure."
He folded another card.
"Let's work."
A moment later, he started humming again.
"Candles," William said, handing me the long plastic lighter. "Don't forget the ones by the gazebo."
I nodded, then walked over to the nearest table, set with thick linens and gold-rimmed china, a huge collection of white lilies at its center. As I bent over the 3-pillar candles arranged just so around the place settings, I breathed in their fragrant smell, hoping it might improve my mood. It couldn't hurt. So the week hadn't been great. At least it was busy, with the details for this weekend's Eleanor Lynn rehearsal dinner and wedding distracting me from Ambrose's cheerful mood and Jilly's own epic night, which I'd heard all about in the days since. Michael Salem, he was indeed always referred to by this double moniker, had just graduated from the Fountain School, skateboarded in competitions, had 4 siblings too, just like her. She'd showed me a picture of him leaning out of the gravy truck, smiling, a dour-looking Crawford reflected in his big, white-framed sunglasses. He was cute and, yes, not her type at all. You just never knew, I guess. I moved on to the next table, lighting the candles there. Behind me, distantly, I could hear my mom talking with Eleanor Lynn's mother, who had proven to be the biggest wrinkle in the fabric of this weekend's events. Mothers of the bride were always a factor. They had emotions and opinions and were often enlisted to convey certain messages or directives the bride was too timid to deliver herself.
Eleanor Lynn didn't need anyone to speak for her, though. She was smart, assertive, and knew exactly what she wanted. I thought she was tough until I met Mrs. Lynn, who was all of these things but louder, bossier, and ready to spar at any second about whatever didn't suit her. In another world, she and my mom might have been friends, purely out of their similarities. In this one, though, they were anything but.
"People will need direction as they come in,"
Mrs. Lynn was saying as she dabbed her face with a Kleenex, of which she kept an impressive supply in the bodice of whatever she was wearing. The first time I'd noticed her yanking out a tissue from this area, it had startled me, but now it was all I could do not to reach over and do the same when the pollen count got high. You got to know people in weird ways at weddings.
And it's rude to not have someone there to greet them.
Eleanor felt, my mom replied, using the two-word prefix she always utilized with Mrs. Lynn in these conversations, that having the table assignments in the gazebo as guests entered would be enough.
"Well, I don't. So put someone there."
With that, she walked away. I risked a glance at my mom, who was watching her go, face calm but eyes narrowed.
There really was no counter-argument to a person telling you that you are wrong and then what to do, even if you were Natalie Barrett, and I felt a rush of protectiveness toward her.
When she glanced at me, though, I quickly went back to the candles. Just as I lit the wick of a round candle in a glass votive, someone leaned over me and blew it out. Annoyed, I glanced up. Ambrose.
"Sorry," he said quickly. "I just can't light a candle without making a wish and blowing it out. It's some kind of birthday neurosis."
I looked at the plastic lighter in his hand. "Then you definitely should not be doing this particular job."
"It's okay," he assured me. "I'm just lighting them, wishing and blowing, then lighting them again."
Granted, it had been a long day. Just about anything had the potential to cross the line of just too damn much. But there was something about this that shot me over it.
"Are you serious?"
I demanded.
"What?"
"That is the stupidest, most waste of time thing I've ever heard."
"Ouch."
He raised his eyebrows.
"Are you mad at me about something?"
"It's not professional! Making wishes, lighting candles twice. You're here representing our company. You need to act like it."
I watched him as he took an exaggeratedly slow look around the backyard of the historic mansion that was our venue. Besides us, there was only the string quartet, tuning up, and a couple of caterers.
"Okay, I'll stop. Sorry."
With that, he went on to another table, and I went back to my own work. I found myself pausing, though, with the next candle I lit, thinking of what he'd said. But I didn't make a wish. What was the point? By 6:55, when all the candles were done and the first guests were pulling up at the valet stand, my mom came over to me. "I'm going to need you to stand by the gazebo and direct the guests to their tables." Her face was sour as she said this, clearly not happy. That made two of us. "Sure," I told her, "but I don't think we need it. People can figure it out for themselves." She gave me a smile, squeezing my arm, and walked away. Over in the gazebo, I double-checked that all the tea lights were lit, the seat assignments lined up neatly on the table in front of them. When an older couple came through, I smiled, ready to guide them, but they just took their cards and walked on, not even looking at me. 1 point to Natalie Barrett. As another group of guests approached, I looked across the tables to the small pond on the backyard's edge, where Ambrose was standing with William, talking about something. His face was animated as he gestured, smiling frequently as William nodded politely, seeming kind of charmed. I thought of Jilly earlier, and all day, really, the unique quality to a person's voice when you know they are just as happy to hear themselves say something as they are to tell it to you.
Of course, I couldn't say Ambrose was definitely talking about Lauren. It could have been Ira, or anything. And yet, Luna? I turned to see Ben Reed standing by the place card table, wearing a shirt and tie and smiling at me. He'd sat beside me for an entire semester of the most boring World Civ class ever, during which we'd taken turns keeping each other awake and always partnered for projects. He was a nice guy, funny and sweet, with a longtime girlfriend, Amy Tellman, who he'd dated since middle school. "Hey," I said, then gave him a hug. "What are you doing here?" "Tennis," he explained. Ben had played for the varsity team. Until that moment, I'd never seen him without a racket poking out of his backpack. Albert Lynn and I grew up doing the camps and tournaments together. Our moms are tight. What about you? How do you know Eleanor and Mark? My mom's the wedding planner. I'm working, I explained, then turned to the table, scanning the cards until I found his name. I picked it up, holding it out to him. And you are at table 6. Thank you, he said, taking it from me. He glanced out into the yard. Looks fancy. Now I wish I'd brought a date. How is Amy? He winced, hearing this, basically answering the question. I wouldn't know. We broke up a couple of weeks ago. What? I said, shocked. He winced again. Whoops. God, I'm sorry. You guys were so... Wow. I'm sorry. He nodded. Thanks. It was her decision. Last summer, before college, wanting to make a fresh start at UC Berkeley, blah, blah. I should have seen it coming. Well, I didn't. Me neither. I'm basically gutted. He sighed, looking down at his card. Anyway, it's great to see you, especially without having old Partone droning on about global implications in front of us. He did love the big consequences, I agreed, as two women entered the gazebo. Have fun tonight. At this, he made a face, then smiled as he started across the lawn to his table. Halfway there, he turned back and glanced at me, looking away quickly when he saw I was still watching him.
Wait, what is this? The tables? How do we know which number we are?
I sighed inwardly, then turned around to help the two women. One point to Mrs. Lynn. No matter the issue, there was always an ongoing tally, somehow. The end of a rehearsal dinner is different from that of a wedding. Even if it's late, there's still that sense of anticipation and excitement, the big event still ahead. That is, if you're a guest. When you're working, it's one down, one to go.
You're sure? You won't get upset?
I gave Ambrose an apologetic look, knowing I deserved this. No, and I shouldn't have earlier. I'm just super grumpy for some reason. I'm sorry.
It's okay,
he said. Then, as I watched, he briefly closed his eyes, blowing out the pillar between us. I wondered what he wished for. I'd never ask, though.
I didn't realize Leo was such a bust as a date.
He wasn't, I told him, blowing out the next candle. It's me.
Lauren seems to think otherwise.
You talked to Lauren about this?
Well, yeah, he said. He glanced at me. You weren't yourself, and Leo is her best friend. I figured she'd have insight.
I suppose I deserved this, too, but it was harder to take somehow. Did she?
She said, he replied, moving to the next table, that he is great if you've known him forever, like she has, but that in college he's become a bit...
I waited, curious about exactly what adjective would follow. This was not a case when you filled it in.
Insufferable, he finished. He blew out another candle. She blames his writing professor and hopes it's just a phase. But she understood he probably isn't the best boyfriend material right now.
Good thing I'm not the one who has to stick in the long-term relationship, I commented.
Oh, I've got you beat, no question, he replied. Lauren will make it easy.
After all the whistling, humming, bouncy steps, and general good cheer, the fact he felt this way shouldn't have been any kind of surprise to me. But hearing it, for whatever reason, was still difficult. I had a flash of him standing behind me, cutting that cake, then quickly pushed it away. "She seems great,"